Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Randy.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. Today's show is a transformative one. The information you will hear is dire. The human race has critical work to do. We are all aware of the dark state the world is in, and that awareness has created a great deal of fear in all of us. It feels as if the human race is spinning out of control. We feel helpless in the face of the surmounting and overwhelming problems, wondering if there's anything we can do as individuals to change the course we are on. Well, help is on the way. Messages are coming through fast and furiously from the spirit world to help us gain perspective, to help us understand our fear, and to help us turn this chaos around. My special guest today, Mona DeVestel, was chosen to intuit a life-changing manual to steer us toward that mission. In August of 2013, she channeled the book Love in a Time of War, 90 Days to Transform Fear into Love, a 400-page book in just 30 hours, from a source that identifies itself as Ed Ryan. Ed Ryan is the name for a collective of 6,000 souls who speak as one. This astonishing book will transform anyone who considers applying its principles. Mona DeVestel is an author, professor, performer, and intuitive. For many years, she fought her ability to feel and receive messages. Mona was born and raised in a multicultural family in Brussels, Belgium. Daughter of a prominent Belgian architect turned New Age guru and a Catholic mother raised in Africa, Mona swore she had no such powers for most of her life, but a near-death experience at age 16 and a series of entertaining and at times comedic experiences with the occult reminded Mona of her connection to the spirit world. When Mona was diagnosed with breast cancer a few years ago, she embarked on a 3-year spiritual journey with shaman and healer Wendy Root. It was then that Mona's conscious spiritual path really began. And now I would love to introduce you to my special guest, Mona DeVestel. Hi, Mona. How are you?
Hi, Randy. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
You are so, so welcome. This is going to be a very powerful show, and the timing of it is amazing. Let's start out by, can you tell us what your near-death experience was like and a little bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. So I was 16 years old, and I was living in Mexico at the time with my family. We were going through a difficult time as a family, and I became very ill, and I think the two elements are connected. I was diagnosed with typhoid fever and pneumonia, the combination was not a good one. And I was riddled with fevers, and I just would go in and out of consciousness, and I had stopped eating completely. I weighed about 95 pounds. I'm 5'9", so that's not a good weight. And I was just simply losing, you know, losing my battle with this illness. And I remember thinking in the days that preceded the near-death experience, I remember thinking that I was going to die. I remember realizing it and feeling complete peace with that possibility or that reality. It was as if I could discern the distinction between my body and my spirit, the energy that inhabited this body of mine. And I could feel that my body was sick, but I wasn't sick. And I felt a deep peace at the thought of no longer having to exist in this form. One night I was in bed, and I could feel myself drifting, and I just was pulled off into this place of complete peace, and I heard sounds of as if somebody was entering the room, walking into the room. Now, I was in no way capable of opening my eyes or understanding what was going on around me, but I remember assuming that it was my mother entering the room. And then the person sat on the edge of my bed, and I felt sort of this weight, you know, pressing down next to me, and then placing her hand on my cheek. And at that moment, it was as if all of the physical pain and all of the physical hardship of the few months that preceded that moment and throughout my illness simply vanished and was pulled out of me, pulled out of my body, and I was filled with absolute peace and absolute well-being. And I remember feeling sort of this joy of, oh, now, you know, everything's going to be just fine. And then I don't know, nothing, you know, I was gone. I don't remember anything else. And a little while later, I actually came back, and my mother came and talked to me. And I said, oh, thank you so much for coming into the room earlier and putting your hand on my cheek and bringing such peace to me. And she said, well, I never did that. It wasn't me. We talked about it, you know, later on and discussed it and had some very interesting comparisons, because she had an experience of her own at that very moment that I was having mine. But the point is that from that moment on, from that moment that I had that experience, if you will, a visitation, I guess, I recovered. The doctors had been completely stumped. They did not know how or what to do to heal me or to bring me back. And from that moment on, I was fine. I started, you know, drinking liquids again. I was able to get off of IV. And I, within about 4 or 5 days of that, I was able to eat solid foods again, which was a huge victory because, as I said, I couldn't even drink water. I couldn't drink anything. I couldn't eat. And from that moment on, I just knew that I would be fine. But I remember the message that I remember when what I assumed was my mother came was, you know, everything is going to be just fine. You have to stay here. You have a lot more to do on this planet. You have a lot more to do on this plane. And so, you know, I was never interested in any of that spiritual stuff. In fact, I was afraid of it. So when that happened, I quickly sort of moved on from it. I knew that it was undeniable that it had happened. I knew that something beyond my understanding had happened. But I did not linger there because I was not ready for any of that path.
Why was it so hard for you to accept and develop or, you know, follow that path? And why did you try to turn away from it so many times?
Well, because I think it has to do with my family background. You know, I grew up in a family where my mother grew up in Africa, and she is a storyteller. So she would tell me these incredible stories that would just raise the back of my hair on the back of my neck, just chill me with fear, because she would tell me about, you know, an evil stepmother that she had, and these rituals that her stepmother would do to cast spells on people, things that were just horrifying to me, that I just did not like these stories, even though I could sense that there was some truth to them. The reason I could sense that is because my mother had would have premonitions. And if she said something would happen, if she said, one time she had a friend who had a miscarriage, and that night that her friend had a miscarriage, she dreamt that this friend was drowning, and she could see her drowning. She woke up and she said, "Nancy's in trouble. I have to call her." She called her and immediately heard the news. And there are countless stories like that. So my mother would tell me these stories. I was afraid. I didn't understand it. I felt that that dimension was something that was frightening. And then my father, when my parents split, he moved to Mexico, and he declared himself, he left his very prominent career as an architect. I have 7 generations of architects in my family. Many of the buildings in Brussels were built by my ancestors, and he declared himself a guru. And I remember that he taught me to see auras when I was just 7 or 8, and I didn't think anything of it at the time. But the point is that my father was also one of the most abusive persons that I've ever met. And so I really had a hard time rectifying the connection between the New Age realm and then someone that could be so damaging. If someone could be damaging, how could they have a spiritual practice that would, quote unquote, influence other people? So I just turned my back to the whole thing. I thought, you know what, I'm not interested. This is not for me. I'm a very rational person. I like the rational realm, and I'd like to reside there and not have anything to do with this spooky stuff that, you know, and just the word New Age and all the stuff that comes with it, it would just kind of make me roll my eyes for a very large part of my adult life.
Right. Well, that's really understandable. And it's, mm-hmm. you know, I think that those who do tend to receive these healings and these messages that come through and everything are generally those who are not welcoming it or are not expecting it. Mm-hmm. And it sort of comes in through the back door, which mm-hmm. is really very transformative for the person, but it can really scare you.
Yeah.
You channeled this book, and you used mm-hmm. automatic writing. What mm-hmm. is automatic writing?
Well, I mean, you know, it's so funny. I use the terms automatic writing sort of loosely, and I used those terms loosely before this whole experience with channeling the book. I would, you know, I teach creative writing, and so I would use that sort of process with my students and say to them, you know, let's just free write about a particular topic. And it can be something as, you know, simple as let's talk about the memory, a memory that you have of cabbage, for example, and boom, you give them 10 minutes and say, write. Anybody can do that. Can do that, and it's actually quite powerful when you unleash the mind and you just sort of let the sensor guard down. You come up with quite a bit of interesting writing, but this was different. This was different, and up until that point, I did channel what I call. I say channel now, but I wouldn't have quite said that before, but I received, if you will, something came through me, texts that were very interesting, sort of beyond my conscious mind during the process of writing them. But, I mean, that's not anything unusual. I mean, anybody who writes and any artist who paints or creates music will say, this came through me, I don't know, it came from beyond me, you know, whatever it is. But this was a little bit different. There was actually a dialogue. There was actually an exchange of information, and the information was deliberate. It wasn't I stumbled upon it. I mean, I stumbled upon it the first time, but then I was able to show up. So it was 90 sessions of 20 minutes each, which is 30 hours. And I was able to show up, and every time I showed up, this information was downloaded. Of course, I struggled with that a great deal, even though I had embraced, you know, my spiritual path up until that point, was sort of forced into it. I was not quite prepared to say, oh, I'm an intuitive and I channel the book. I really struggled with that. I even considered the possibility of absolute mental illness. And I said, you know, there are three possibilities. Either I am mentally ill, or I am a genius, or I am channeling something. I'm receiving something. Somehow I'm a conduit for something that comes from beyond me, that I am connected to, that we're all connected to, but that is from beyond me. So I think the answer is irrelevant. You know, it could be option one, two, or three. It really doesn't matter at this point. I think what matters is the tech. Does it help someone? And if so, great. And if it doesn't, you know, maybe it's not the right text for them. But I think there is something of value in that process.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about now this entity that you channeled called mm-hmm. Edrian? Is that how you pronounce the name?
Yeah, I say okay. Edrian, yeah.
Right. So they were a collective of 6,000 souls, and they spoke
yes,
as one. Can you tell us a little?
7,000 souls, yes.
7,000 souls who speak as one.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell us about Edrian and what you found out and why you think they chose you?
Well, what I know is, you know, very early on, I think it was around session two or three, it was clear to me that there was something that was moving through me. So I said, who is this? Of course, in the back of my mind, thinking, wow, you have really lost it. Now you're talking to another part of yourself. I believe that's called split personality. I'm not sure. But I said, who is this? And they identified themselves as Edrian. We're a collective of 7,000 souls. And I said, oh, boy, what do you mean? And they said, well, we are part of the collective consciousness. Some of us have been embodied in human form, but most of us have not. And I said, well, why are you giving me this information? And they said, we would like to give you some information to share with others because this is a dire time for the planet. I said, what is this book about? And they said, about love. And then I said, well, can you be more specific? And then they were specific and gave me a whole list of the topics that are discussed in the book, from the environment and wars and, you know, current events to health, healing, and children and marriage and all kinds of things. But, so I asked them, why me? Why, you know, I said, I'm not particularly spiritually evolved. I don't understand why I would be the one to do this. And they said, well, because you actually chose writing to be a messenger before you came here. And it's funny because, you know, when I was a child, I was about 4 or 5, I would write all over the place. I would write on my face, on my body, on the walls. And my mother was always saying, please stop writing everywhere. Stop writing. And I really think that I knew that I had come here to write. But of course, there's writing and then there's writing. I mean, I've been writing, you know, novels and short stories and memoirs and screenplays, and that was just great. This was definitely not in my path of vision of how I had intended to live my life or add this to one of my you know, projects or tasks.
Right. I can imagine. I think anyone would question their sanity and what this whole purpose was if they started, you know, channeling these or hearing these voices speak to them. But this information clearly is not something that's come from you. So it's
but
wisdom.
But it wasn't really voices. I mean, I never heard actual voices, so I want to make sure that's clear. It was more, it felt more like electricity moving through me, and I would start typing. And what I was typing was, it came so fast, I could barely keep up with my ability to type, that, you know, it was kind of like a flow of, really like a faucet. You know, you turn it on and the water flows. You turn it off and
wow.
it stops. But I never actually heard, so that's why when I say I pronounce it Adrine, I have no idea how it's pronounced. It's not like I heard them in my head saying, our name is Adrine. I just typed those words. I misspelled it at one point, and they said, no, it is N-E-D-R-Y-O-N. But when I say they said, you know, again, I don't know, it's not really something that I heard. In fact, if I would think about it, sometimes I would think about some of the things that came through me. I was aware of it. That would slow the flow. It was like my awareness would get in the way, and then they would, you know, and then I would have nothing. I would just sit there at the keyboard, and I'm like, hello. and then, you know, the words would come again, and it would say, actually, just it's almost like, you know, instead of having sharp focus, have soft focus, you know, that.
Right.
When you're looking at a painting, if you're staring at it, then it doesn't work, but sort of, you know, have this soft focus, and then the flow would resume.
Right. It's fascinating. You know, and what really fascinated me, and I did read about 95% of your book, and I have a few more pages to go. It's a long book, but I just found it so, the information so amazing and so enlightening for me. But I was amazed that as fast as that information was coming through, you were still able to understand it and ask questions. Did those questions come as they were dictating this information to you, or did you do that after the fact?
No, it came as I was doing it. So I would type something, and then I would stop, and then I would ask questions. I would look at it, and I would ask questions. A lot of the information sort of was in conflict with some of my, either my beliefs or my own struggles, or some of it was beyond my understanding. Later on, I actually ended up going to the Harvard Physics Department's website and looked at, it was like a Physics 101 document that explained some basic concepts. And then when I read those concepts, I thought, that makes more sense. Now what I actually typed, you know, that session makes more sense, because some of it, for example, harmonic motion principles with, you know, pendulum to explain sort of the cycles of change that our planet is going through, that was beyond my scope. You know, I'm a humanities person. I'm a I speak four languages. I can read and write anything, but I'm not great with numbers or, you know, that kind of mathematical thinking. So I would actually Google things, and then I would say, oh, that's what that means. Oh, that's what this is. But yeah, some of the questions, I mean, I had arguments with, you know, some of Adrine's suggestions saying things like we choose the form in which we're born. And I say, well, why would you choose to be born in war-torn Congo, for example, which is something that I write about in my creative, my actual profession as a writer and as a professor. This is what I do. I write about very difficult things in history, you know, like genocide in Rwanda, for example. I would say, why would you choose that? And so Adrian would go on these long explanations about it, you know, about how people choose their missions and how certain circumstances facilitate that mission. And so, you know, I would get angry. I would say, oh, that is so, that is just so awful to say. It is so awful to say when, you know, when extremists raided that mall in Kenya, and they killed, I think it was 65 people, one of whom was a woman who was pregnant. She was a humanitarian aid worker. And I thought, come on, how can you make sense of this? You know, this doesn't make any sense to me. And they said that, you know, sometimes people choose a mission such as raising compassion in others. And they said, you know, imagine the compassion that that death has raised in millions of people. And it's true. I must admit that I, when I read about it, there was an article about her and I cried. And I remember feeling deep grief and also anger at the loss of life. You know, this woman had come to do such great things and then she was brutally murdered senselessly. And Adrian said, but think about it, the compassion that you felt and the millions of people who read that article in the New York Times, you know, about her, that, she, you know, that is something she may have chosen. And so, you know, I still struggle with that. I still struggle with that, but I certainly think about it differently. I think about those things differently for sure.
Adrian talks a lot about the collective consciousness, and I found it very interesting. What they were saying is that the entire purpose of the human race is to advance collectively toward oneness mm-hmm. and the light of the divine.
Mm-hmm.
What they said was the collective consciousness is an organism of sorts that grows and changes and is fluid. The growth is constant and is based on the experiences and renewal of the experiences of the individuals that incarnate and make the collective. When people accomplish mm-hmm. their missions, they are able to return to the source, bringing with them a raised energy field, which in turn raises the energy field of the collective exponentially. They talked mm-hmm. a lot about this, this exponential impact of love mm-hmm. And this. Can you tell us a little bit about what they shared about that, about our collective consciousness?
Yeah, it was an actually really interesting concept of the exponential power of love. So if one person, and I found this to be true, of course, you know, if you think about it on a causal level, but If you have one person who connects with their higher self, if you want to use that word, or with their just with love, with being, you know, loving and kind, when you go out into the world and you say hi to someone and you smile and you, you know, whatever it is, you say have a great day, or you're genuinely kind to someone, that has an exponential impact. For example, you transfer that energy onto them. That in turn may open them to do the same, and that ripples out into the community and into the world and has benefits on an exponential level. So the idea is that, you know, we are greater than the sum of our parts. And I thought that was, you know, that was a beautiful concept to think about, because I definitely see it, you know, when we're in a bad mood, you know, somebody cuts you off in traffic and you say, oh, my gosh, you know, I can't believe this just happened. You go out and you pass that energy on to someone else, maybe at a clerk, you know, at a store with a clerk. And then they think, gosh, you know, this woman is really unpleasant. But the same happens, you know, conversely. So I think it's an interesting concept. I think that we have the ability to really be our true selves. I used to think when I was a teenager that humans were inherently flawed, that there was an inherent flaw that made humans do the things that they did. And then as I grew and I, you know, as I read a lot of different philosophers, I adopted different philosophies. And now I really believe that humans are inherently good. and that circumstances can alter a human being and bring them to darkness. And it's a challenging concept, you know, especially when you look at what's happening in the news with, you know, some of those senseless killings. You think, how did that human being get to be that way? What happened? And I really genuinely believe that it's a combination of mechanisms of circumstance and the structure of a society and personal severance from source, personal severance from love. Yeah, I think that's what's happening. But also reconnecting is very powerful.
Right. And for those who are listening...
It's a practice. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, for those who are listening, because what we're talking about here is just the tip of the iceberg of what this book goes into. So I urge you to read this because it elaborates so much more on what we're saying. And unfortunately, we don't have a whole lot of time to really get into this stuff. But these questions are all addressed by Adrian. And Mona asks a lot of really, really provocative questions. The book is about people moving away from fear and transforming their lives towards love.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do that?
Well, it is clear that the way to do it is to develop a daily practice. And the practice is, there is not a practice. So that Adrian is very clear. There are many, many, many ways to do that. So Adrian doesn't pretend to say, oh, you should do A, B, and C. Because we're individuals, we come in individual forms with different cultures and different, you know, likes and dislikes. And what's going to work for me is not going to necessarily work for you. But the key is to have a daily practice. It could be meditation. It could be yoga. It could be going to church. It could be walking, you know, hiking in the woods and just feeling one with nature. And Adrian is very clear that there is no religion and spirituality are not the same thing. And also having a religious practice doesn't necessarily mean having a spiritual practice and vice versa. So whatever works for you, whether you're an atheist or you're a Christian or another religion, a Muslim or whatever it may be, having that practice that reconnects you. It could even be 5 minutes a day. That actually, they, you know, Adrian will say, 5 minutes a day can impact your life tremendously. Just having those 5 minutes when you connect with your breath, when you connect with yourself, when you silence all of the fear and all of the noise of life, it just brings a clarity that will reconnect you with what you know to be true. And only you know what is true. So in other words, when you're connected to yourself, your intuition is absolutely 100% accurate. And, you know, I struggled with that too, because some people who are fanatics will do things they are convinced are, you know, that is the truth. But Adrian says, you know, when you know that you're impacting the lives of others in a negative way, you know that you're not connected to source, because when you're harming another person, you're really harming yourself and you're harming source, since we're all connected. So that's a gauge too. You know, when you want to lash out at someone and you think, well, that is the best thing to do. I'm laughing because obviously that can never be the best thing to do. You know that you're actually off the path and off and disconnected from source.
Right. Right. And fear, they talk about fear being a blockage that basically stops everything from manifesting, or actually creates the things that we don't want. The fear we become the fear. We become exactly what
right.
we fear. Yeah.
Right.
What did they? Can you tell us more about that?
Well, I guess the concept is that fear constricts and love expands. Fear constricts the flow of information between yourself and source, which you are source, so it's sort of interesting. But and love expands that connection. Love expands or allows the clarity to flow. You know, it's funny because throughout the book, Adrian says, you know, the challenge of this of this book is that we are talking with you in this binary form, in this with dualistic terms of, you know, hierarchies and yes, no, light, dark, love, fear, these levels of fragmentation that are inherent in our physical realm. So it's impossible for us to conceive of a world where there is no duality. And they said, but the thing that we're discussing is a non-dual realm. So we're using dual language to discuss non-dual realm. So it is challenging because you humans, you know, mortal beings, are limited in your ability to conceive or to conceptualize of a world that is non-dual. And so what that means is that, you know, there is no higher consciousness, because higher implies a hierarchy of level. There is connection with source or non-connection with source. And even that is a dual, that is a dual mechanism. So it's a little bit challenging to wrap your brain around it, but the concept is that when you are basically connected to love, you are your true self. And when you're not connected to love, fear constricts your flow, and you are definitely not connected to source. So I don't know, it's so simple, but it's mind-boggling.
Right. Yeah, it is. I agree with you. It's very simple. And if we try to analyze it, we can't.
Right. Right.
But the thing is that we keep hearing these messages, at least I do. Many people have told me, and I've read many books, and this message just keeps coming through from so many sources. So it really comes down to just blind faith.
Right.
And then at that point, it is a matter of trying it and seeing how your life changes. And, you know, and I'm amazed when I stop blocking things, how quickly I get signs that things are changing.
Right.
And so that feedback then gives you more, it makes you want to go for this even more. So if you just try it a little bit, you'll see that it's working and then you want to do more.
Right.
And
the more you align yourself with your true self, as you said, the more things manifest around you, seemingly out of your beyond your control. I mean, wonderful things. Dryan says, you know, when you are aligned with your path, literally people will show up at your doorstep to help you, and I found that to be true. You know, I've been leading workshops on the Dryan principles and concepts, and at one point I said, oh, I really would love to connect with somebody who has a retreat center, you know, in the San Diego area. It has to be beautiful, preferably free of charge for me, but that would bring them business. And I thought, you know, I remember thinking, gosh, I'm asking for a lot here as I'm saying these things out loud. And literally the next day, a man emailed me, found me on the web, and said, oh, by the way, I have a retreat center. I love what you do. I love your book. And if you want to ever lead retreats here, you know, feel free to, you know, come visit. And I went to visit, and it was gorgeous. And it was amazing, and I led a retreat there. And it's sort of been like that for a lot of things, you know. Just people will find me. People will find me and say, hey, almost as if they could hear me.
Right.
You know, say, oh, did you ask for a publisher for your book? Well, guess what? I have one.
Right. This absolutely happens. To whoever's listening, this is absolute truth. This does happen. Mm-hmm. We think it's miracles, but really it's us just letting go, just asking the universe for what we want and just expecting that it's going to happen, and it will.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think it's more than magical thinking, because I always cringe at that thought, like, oh, you know, you magically want something to appear and then it does. And Adrian says, no, it's quantum physics, you know, it's the idea of energy attracting certain energies. So there's no magic, there's no woo-woo in it. It's simply you are aligned with this energy, and therefore you're going to attract things from that energy. The same is true, conversely, with fear and negativity. If you're always imagining, you know, dire circumstances, guess what? those are going to manifest, not because of magical thinking, but because that is where you are aligning yourself. That is where you are bringing your life at center with that particular manifestation. So I think I have, you know, I'm more at peace with that concept, because I cringe at the thought of magical thinking. You know, terrible things happen to amazing people. And, you know, I mean, I talk about that in the book too, when Adrian talks about those things that happen. That was one of my questions. I said, why do terrible things happen to amazing people? And that's not a new question, but it's something that has definitely been on the forefront for me.
Right, and I think Adrian addresses that in a way that makes it a little more understandable. We're never going to be able to digest that completely as human beings.
Right.
But I did find some of the explanations really were eye-opening and gave me a different perspective into looking at it, because really everything that happens here, there's a bigger picture. If we analyze it down to the detail, we can't see it. But
right.
there's always a bigger picture and a universal intention that happens from it. We are getting so close to running out of time. Would you just take about 2 minutes and tell us about how people can reach you, where they can get your book, and those kind of things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So my website is www.adrian.com, so it's EDRYON.com, and you can find links to my workshops and retreats. Also, there's a book trailer video about the book. The book can be found on Amazon. You can get it in Kindle form, electronic form, format, and also in print. And also, you can find me on Facebook on Love in a Time of War. So if you just type Love in a Time of War on Facebook, you can like the page and join some of the discussions there and see, you know, where I'll be leading workshops. I plan on doing workshops in the next few months in different locations, and I will definitely be announcing that when the time is right.
That's very exciting. Well, everybody, you know, I know I will be checking up on that. I thank you so much for coming on, because this, you have offered us not only is your story so phenomenal and so interesting, but the information that you have intuited, or however you want to say that, is life-changing. Not only life-changing, but consciousness-changing. So it's very, very important that we open our eyes and take heed. So thank you so much for coming on. Okay.
Yes. Thank you so much, Randy, for having me. It was a pleasure.
You are so welcome, and you are a pleasure, too. Okay. Bye-bye. Unfortunately, our time is up for today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show or any other shows, please email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. You know me on the radio, but you can now speak to me privately and confidentially on the telephone. I am doing counseling, so you can call me and talk to me about any issues that concern you. For more information about that, please go to clarity.fm/randy-g-fine. That's clarity.randy-g-fine. If you enjoy listening to my shows, please become a show follower. More followers will get the show the recognition that it deserves. And please visit my blog at randygfine.com for even more inspiration, and join the list of devoted followers there. That list is growing it's just growing every day. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is talk radio show host and author Randy Fine, signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, randygfine.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.